Welcome, everybody. This is Tim Emerson of Kuan Yin Healing, and I'm here today with Sharon Karn. Sharon is an author, speaker, musician, recording artist, sound healer, Reiki master, and consultant, and the founder of Sound Wellness and the Sound Wellness Institute. Sound wellness programs are at the forefront of education and how sound and music can be easily applied to your everyday life to reduce stress, to help you concentrate, energize you, inspire you, and support your health. Through the Sound Wellness Institute, holistic health practitioners receive the highest level of competency training in Canada using sound and music to support their practice. And today, Karen is going to talk to us about releasing stuck emotional energy through sound. So this is going to be a great interview. Sharon, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you, Tim. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm so honored.
Well, I'm delighted you're with us. For folks listening, just before the call, Sharon was running through some of the things that she was thinking of covering. I can tell you this is going to be quite a ride. So lots and lots of wonderful content here. So Sharon, where do we start?
Oh, golly. Well, let me talk a little bit about moving emotions with sound, and then I want to backtrack into a little bit of background in emotions themselves. And emotions are life energy. They're certainly something that moves us through our day, and we sometimes don't realize how profoundly, powerfully emotions affect our day. So the more that I learn personally about emotional energy and how to manage it within my own day, then I find the more harmony and balance I can create for myself. So what we're going to be talking about today is more specifically using sound to help release stuck emotional energy. Now, I wanted to share some information with you that explains a little bit about how emotions get stuck and some of the science behind that. But just to kind of give you an idea of where we're going to be going with sound is that I'm sure you've seen a video or heard about the soprano who breaks the wine glass with her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know my husband, Ed, loves the... there's a show that goes through Mythbusters, and they did actually a whole segment around breaking a wine glass where they studied how do you break a wine glass with your voice. Anyway, the technique for breaking a glass with your voice is to tap the glass and find out what its sound is, and then you sing the same sound. Sound is a very physical energy, and we don't always think of it that way. It's a physical energy that goes through you. It goes through you faster than sound goes through the air. The denser the material, the faster sound travels, and you are denser than air. So sound goes through you very quickly. Now, your voice is created inside of you also. And when you match a sound, then it will shake it up even more. It sets it into a really strong vibration. And when the soprano is singing the same sound as the wine glass, it sets all of those molecules into such a state of vibration, they can't hold together anymore. So it breaks apart, it explodes. And that's a bit of a dramatic explanation of kind of what we do with the voice with an emotional energy, only it's a lot gentler. What we do is we match the sound of the emotional energy, and then using the sound of your voice in a very gentle way, you set it into a state of vibration and allow it just to move and go. So it is, I believe, one of the most powerful things we teach in all of our courses. This comes from our first course, and it is such a powerful technique for helping you really manage those times when there's a lot of emotional stuff going on, or when something comes to your attention physically that can be one of those emotions that are stuck. So I want to now just backtrack a little bit into a bit of the science behind emotions, just to give you a bit of information. So if you have a pencil and a paper, you'll probably want to take lots of notes. I wanted to one of the questions I had when I first started researching how do we help people manage and heal emotional energy, what does science tell us about emotions? Well, science has located it into the brain in what they call the limbic system, which is an older part of the brain, kind of underneath the frontal cortex, the main part at the top of your head. So in the limbic system, we have a bunch of different parts that all respond profoundly to emotions. So science has kind of found an area in the brain where it seems to be triggered and where there seems to be the first responses when we get an emotional stimulus. Science also says that emotion has two parts. It has a stimulus, and a stimulus is like an angry dog running towards you with its teeth bared. Mm-hmm. That is a stimulus. That is a fact of a dog running towards you. And then there's also the response. So as soon as you see an angry dog running towards you, then the limbic system lights up and you go into what's called the fight or flight response. And in the fight or flight response, your heartbeat speeds up. That gets more blood to the extremities. Also, the center core of the body kind of lowers its functioning, so you get more energy to the extremities. You also get adrenaline and cortisol released, which gets you ready to run faster than you usually run. So there's a lot of hormones being released from different parts of this limbic system and the whole nervous system. The emotions are deeply connected to the endocrine system, all of the glands of the body. So every time you have an emotional response, the effect of the emotional response goes everywhere in your body. Now, where we get stuck is we have a stimulus, which is the dog running towards us. We have the response, which is the biochemical release of hormones that helps us either fight or run fast. So what happens when the dog stops? Its owner calls it and it returns, and then the stimulus is gone. So the body returns to its normal state easily. And it takes about 90 seconds for adrenaline to go right through your system, and then the body returns. Then cortisol takes a little bit longer to settle the system back into its normal emotional response. But we keep continuing the response with all of our stories we tell about it. For example, you go home and you tell everybody in your family what happened, or you go to work, and every single time you tell the story, you re-stimulate the response. Your brain and nervous system doesn't know the difference between the actual dog running towards you and the story about the dog running towards you. So plant that into your awareness that every time, and we tell stories, that's our life, and we can't not tell stories, but just know that every time you tell a story, there's a biochemical response in your body.
Sharon, I have a good way to help remember this.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, actually someone said this to me one day when I was unfolding with some anger of my, you know, how my day had gone. And he said to me, "Did you really have a bad day? Or did you have a bad moment that you've milked all day?" And
that is so perfect, Tim. Oh, my God. And we so do this, don't
we? Yes, we do. And that's when I realized I could choose a good moment and milk that all day instead.
What a great friend.
Yes. It's always good to have friends who aren't afraid to use a 2x4 when needed.
Yes. I've got some of those, too, and I value them. It's not great to get the 2x4, but, you know, I really need it.
Right. So here we are with stuck emotion now.
Yes. So sometimes when we repeat a story over and over and over again, and this is for those who have suffered trauma, is that it can go into the body and we allow it to continue to grow. Like you said, we're milking that emotion. And because our response to emotional energy goes through our entire body, sometimes it can kind of plant itself there. Sometimes we don't want to deal with something when it comes up in our day, and we just can't deal with it right now. You've got to do something else, or something else is on your plate, and you just can't deal with that emotion. We tend to plant it. Many of us plant it into our body. I know I'm a good planter. I always have been. So this is part of my learning and my ongoing practice with myself is going, okay, let's wiggle around a bit and find out, okay, what's been planted today. Sometimes that's a really good thing because it helps us focus on what we need to focus on. Then we can go back and deal with that emotion later. But then we forget about it. And then it stays there as a little bit of a sore that's not quite healed. And we have a bunch of these all over the body. Massage therapists know about this when they're working on parts of the body, that all of a sudden there can be some tears when a muscle is being worked on, and that is the emotion being released. I wanted to share a couple of definitions of emotions too here, because Candace Pert has done a lot of great research on the limbic system and the whole endocrine system and how it relates to our emotions in her research. She wrote a book called Molecules of Emotion, in where she talks a lot about how this works. And she has some things about emotions I would love to read to you and share.
Great.
Because it really helped me understand her understanding of emotions from the scientific basis. So this is Candace Pert from Molecules of Emotion, and she says, the neuropeptides and receptors, the biochemicals of emotions are, as I have said, the messengers carrying information to link the major systems of the body into one unit that we can call the body-mind. We can no longer think of the emotions as having less validity than physical material substance, but instead see them as cellular signals that are involved in the process of translating information into physical reality, literally transforming mind into matter. As we have seen, the neuropeptides and their receptors are the substrates of the emotions, and they are in constant communication with the immune system, the mechanism through which health and disease are created. Your body is your subconscious mind. Powerful information. And then another scientist who spent almost her entire career studying the human energy field, and that's Dr. Valerie Hunt. She talks about some of her basic research in a book called Infinite Mind. And as she started understanding the energy field, she measured the field in the beginning with electrocardiogram, which measures your heartbeat, electroencephalogram, which measures your brain waves, and then electromyogram, which measures your muscles. What she found, which was fascinating, is that there's all kinds of electrical signal at the bottom of the electromyogram that most scientists figured was just junk sound. And she decided one day to amplify that. She had to build a special machine or a way of amplifying those frequencies. They were very high frequencies. And what she found was that junk sound at the bottom of the myogram, electromyogram, was actually the human energy field and how to measure it scientifically with those high frequencies. So because she was focused on the field, she has a field explanation of the emotions, because the emotions just aren't in your body. You have an electromagnetic energy field that comes from the electromagnetic workings in all of your cells that extends beyond your body. And there's a great deal of information in that energy field that she spent decades studying. So I wanted to read a little bit about what she says that expands Candace Pert's understanding of the emotions as a biochemical response. So what Valerie Hunt says about the emotions is, academic definitions of emotion have yielded two approaches. emotion has experience and emotion has physiological process. Neither description fits the discussion of emotions in higher awareness or mystical states. Only a field concept fills the bill. Here, the human mind is envisioned as an energy field organized by emotion, where emotion is an agitation, a disturbance in the quality of flow of energy occurring as a result of field transaction. So this is a fascinating, fascinating way to expand our understanding of emotion. Science has spent 100, 150, 200 years trying to figure out how do we define this, and they're still working on it. There are some great theories, but it's a fascinating study. We're getting more information that helps us as far as healing stuck emotional energy. And I also wanted to share with everyone the whole thought about perceptual filters. This, to me, is understanding your inner sage, your inner wise one. Your inner wise one is a part of your being that is connected to your spirit and soul that understands why you're here. And we have all these perceptual filters and beliefs that we put in front of a fact of what we see. For example, that dog running towards you with teeth bared is a fact that's going on in your life right now. What is a filter is, oh my God, I'm terrified of dogs. Mm. Or, oh, I hate dogs. Or, oh, maybe I can make this dog really friendly. I love dogs. So those are filters and beliefs and experiences that color an actual factual thing. Our lives are actually a series of factual things. We respond to them with a whole series of beliefs and past experiences. So what I found a definition for perceptual intelligence that I wanted to share with you that I use all the time, and it gives me a lot of confidence in going, and when I get stuck with something going on in me that I can't get to the bottom of, then I use this to help me bring more clarity. And it's a definition of perceptual intelligence. And here is the definition. Perceptual intelligence is the knowledge and understanding that everything we experience, especially your thoughts and your feelings, are defined by perception. It's important to realize that this is an active, not a passive process, and therefore you have the ability to control it or change it. Most of the time, this is going all day long, and we have no idea, really, what is coloring how we see the facts that are going on in front of us. So I want to plant that thought, that understanding that how you see things is your choice, and that you can also choose to change how you see things.
Hmm.
Okay, now... The science behind using emotion as sound, as an emotion to help move, emotion, how to move stuck emotional energy with sound. Mm-hmm. There is a musician who started his career as a concert pianist. His name is Manfred Kleins, Clynes. If you want to check him out on the internet. His research is really interesting because when he left his career as a concert pianist, he started getting really, really interested in the whole idea of how do we communicate emotion with sound. And so what he found is that he created a scientific process to measure emotion. And he discovered through this process that every emotion has a sound. Every emotion has a sound. And these he called centic forms. That's S-E-N-T-I-C, centic forms. So when you go back to the idea of emotional energy that you just don't want to deal with right now, you plant it somewhere in your body. Every one of those planted emotions has a sound. And because your voice is created inside of you, it is one of your most powerful tools to go within, to use that sound, to focus that sound on an area of your body where you feel you may have one of these places of stuck emotional energy. So some of there are three main principles to use when you want to explore this process in clearing old emotional energy. And that first one is to know that all emotions have a sound signature. Every emotion has a sound. This is a centic form. The second principle is that emotions tend to be localized in the physical body. So they're somewhere in your body. And in rare exceptions, they can be in the field where sometimes it's too much for the body to manage a big emotion, so it can be planted in the field. Dr. Hunt kind of has a lot of the scientific basis for working with the information that's been planted out in the field. Wonderful work that she does. And then the third principle is that sound, mostly your voice, can be used to unwind this emotional energy. Now, I love the word unwind, because unwinding, we always imagine as a vortex kind of energy. Now, every time you do the dishes and you let the water out, you see this spiral of energy, or this tornado happening at the drain of your sink, right? As the water goes down the drain. It's the same kind of image, where it creates almost an unwinding vortex that allows the emotion to go. Mm-hmm. And it's a fascinating process, and I'm going to keep your pencil and paper handy because I want to just kind of go through the details of the process so you can explore this. There will be a video up on the site that you can watch to see how it works in with another person as I guide another person through this process. And one of the things I've found is that in the different steps of the process, that I when I'm working and guiding another person through it, often I'll kind of, you might find that I skip one or two of the steps along the way. So mm-hmm. This is a general process to use as a guide. And then intuitively, you may find yourself just kind of working with that or condensing it or expanding it as needed as you're going through it. And I wanted to give an example of an experience in Fraser, because when I demonstrate this, there can be very simple experiences and sometimes pretty profound experiences depending on what emotion is holding a pain in the body. So Fraser volunteered during one of our courses to demonstrate this technique of releasing emotional energy. And he had said he had chronic pain and tension in his upper back for 10 years. He worked in IT industry and did a lot of work at the computer. So he had a lot of tension in his upper back. So we went through this process. And in 5 to 10 minutes, the pain was completely released. There was zero pain. And so he came up to me, I sent him an email about a year and a half later and asked if I could use this example in my book. And he said, yes, you can. And he also said, because you gave me how to use this technique, it's never come back. Because if ever starts, then I use this same technique, this process, to keep the pain out of the body. And so he and his wife do use this a lot on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, or whenever something comes up that comes to their attention that this process can help with. So it's he found it really, really helpful for managing pain. And I know, Tim, one of the things you share so beautifully in your work is how helpful energy work is for managing pain.
Yes, and not only that, but the importance of learning self-healing techniques along with energy healing, so that when things come up, you can treat them yourself or maintain the treatment that you got.
Exactly. This is one of those things. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on to give you a sense of what to do as you're going through this process with yourself.
Okay.
So, unwinding emotional energy. Step number one that I always do is I acknowledge the space I'm in and do something to create a sacred space. Because for me, creating a sacred space helps me to focus my intention for what I'm doing. So it can be just lighting a candle to create with the intention to create a sacred space, saying a prayer, a favorite prayer, visualizing a golden bubble around the space. Many people love to call in guides and angels. Some people love to open the directions if they have some of that training or prayer that opens the directions in the native way. And also there are smudge and sage. There's a lot of different ways that you can use to create a sacred space. So the first step is to do something with intention to create a sacred space. Mm-hmm. Now, the second one is to ground. Because we're working with sound, sound is a physical energy, but it also works at the deep energetic and emotional level. So it's important to be grounded. And one of my favorite ways to ground is to imagine you're a tree. And this I've seen in many different ways. You can go onto the internet and even find a simple meditation for going through imagining you're a tree. So your body is the trunk of the tree. Your feet grow roots deep, deep, deep into the earth. Sometimes I'll even wrap my roots around the core of the earth to really feel solidly grounded. And then your branches grow up towards the sun, and the sun provides the light and golden energy that comes back down into the tree and feeds the tree. So it's whatever way you feel the image of a tree is helpful to you, then it's a wonderful way to be grounded. Some people like to use dark stones for grounding. That's a nice way, too. Mm-hmm. There's essential oils that are wonderful for grounding. There's lots of great ways to be grounded. Breath work is a wonderful way to be grounded. So that's step two. Step three is to just tune into your voice. And one of the ways that is so, so simple to tune into your voice is to just do a vocalized sigh. So you begin by taking a deep breath and then sigh out as a breath sigh. This is the body's natural way to reduce stress. It's programmed into us. We do it all the time whenever we're feeling stressed. We just sigh. It's one of those natural sounds of the body. Now, to expand that, I love to do what I call a vocalized sigh. So it sounds like this, where you take a deep breath in. So I start at a higher sound with my voice, and I just let it drop. All of these natural sounds of the body, the moans and the groans and the sighs and all of the things, the ahs and the oohs, these sounds have actually been found to release endorphins or neurochemicals that help the body heal and manage pain. So even just doing this is a wonderful thing to do to reduce stress. Use the vocalized sigh. So it warms up the body a little bit and warms up your voice if you're not used to using your voice. So step four is to scan your body with your mind. And here I encourage you to stay out of the mind and logical thoughts. I have never had any trouble with people in finding the sounds in their body and allowing that sound to come from the body. Sometimes it takes a reminder or two to, that's a comment that came from the mind, go back to the body. So we're allowing the body to speak. Plant that thought. You're allowing your body to speak, not the mind. Okay, so we allow the mind to scan through the body and just notice what comes up. And it could be, oh, there's something in my right shoulder, or there's something in my left knee, or there's something in my stomach, or there's something in my right hip. It could be just, you just notice something that comes to your attention. It may not be a pain. It's just coming to your attention. It's the first thing that you notice as you scan your body. And if you find that nothing is coming to your attention, then just pick something and play. Pick something. And just explore and play with this process if you find it's something you want to dig into. Okay. So, number four is scan the body. Number five is to find the sound of that place that has come to your attention. So, what I love to do first is to breathe into that place. So, if we pick a right shoulder, for example, you take a deep breath in and send that breath to the right shoulder, and then breathe out normally. So you breathe in, send that breath to the right shoulder, then breathe out, either through the nose or through the mouth, doesn't really matter here. So you breathe a few times into that spot, in this example, it's the right shoulder, and then you breathe out. And then you start to make the sigh audible. So just slide the voice around a bit, very gentle. And then one thing that can be helpful, now here you're gathering information. You can ask that part of the body, do you have a message for me? It might not. This is information to help you. So if you find there's a message, you can jot that down or remember the message and then breathe into it again. And then the next step in this is to ask that part of the body for its sound. That part of the body is an emotional energy that has come to your attention. Ask that emotional energy for its sound. Now, sometimes, and I, pretty well every time I've guided people through this process, is that their body knows the sound. And trust that. Your body knows the sound. And if you're not quite sure, then sometimes what I do is I'll slide my voice up and down and notice where it wants to stay. So I'll demonstrate that. So this I call the siren. So it's sliding your voice up and down. It wants to return to that sound. Three times it's come back to that, and just with me sliding my voice around. So, is the sound that will support moving an emotion out of that shoulder right at this moment. Sometimes you find as you begin to work with the sound needs to change because an emotion can lighten up a little bit or it can move to another place of the body. I've found that too, as an emotion loosens up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when an emotion loosens up, that there can be a sensation of feeling it again. And I've found this happen in about, probably 50% of the people I've worked with, is that there's an emotional response or a couple of tears or some laughter, or the body needs to respond with tears and laughters to help that energy go. Not always. Sometimes it's just you match the sound, it shakes up the energy of that emotion and it allows it to move and begin to move out of the body. Okay, so that's kind of an extended explanation of number five, which is find the sound of that emotion. Now, after you've made that sound, and usually it's a singing sound, sometimes it can be another kind of sound, so trust your body. Your body knows the sound that's needed. Now, step number six is to stop for a moment, breathe into it, and then check in with that spot. Does it feel any different? Is there anything going on? Has it moved? Does it feel lighter? Is there energy flow there? Sometimes when you're focusing on a part of the body, you notice tingles or warmth. That's more blood flow going to that area of the body. Mm-hmm. So just notice if anything has shifted or changed. Now, when you stop for a moment, and this activates other centers of the brain, and it also expands the experience too. So you're using more of your brain here. You're more logical, thinking, okay, what's different? Go into the body. Then scan the body again, make sure if it's in the same place or if it's moved. If it's moved or even if it's in the same place, ask if the sound is the same. And then, or ask it for its sound, and then continue to make the sound. So stop every once in a while. It could be it just takes 4 or 5 breaths. It could be that it takes 10 minutes or more in order to continue to make the sound, to shake up this emotion enough to allow it to go. So allow whatever time is necessary to help that emotion leave. Now, step 7 is to allow it to go. Mm-hmm. And we've been holding on to emotional energy, some of this, for a long time. Now, one of the things that, because if it's an energy that you've been hanging on to for a long time, is that sometimes there's an energy of attraction between you and that emotion. There's a reason it was there. So what I do is imagine an energy cord. It's like an umbilical cord between that emotion and me. And I imagine that umbilical cord dissolving. And as it dissolves, it completely detaches any attraction for that to come back. Now, I also ask for that energy's guides and angels. This is my personal process that I love. I ask for that energy's guides and angels to encase it in a golden bubble. Sometimes I do that, and allow it to go where it needs to go now. Everything is evolving, so it can go where it needs to go. It's being guided, and I have detached from it. Now, mind you, continued thoughts on that same emotional theme can bring it back. So just yes, plant that thought that this can be an ongoing process. Or if so just plant that thought that you may have to work on this a little bit if it feels like that's necessary with this.
I've heard it said that everything I've ever let go of had claw marks all over it.
I've experienced that too. Yeah, sometimes what I do in the visualization is I kind of pull out the claws and let them go up with the umbilical cord. I've literally pulled some of these out, yeah. It's fascinating. Okay, so the energy is gone. Never leave an empty space. Step 8, fill the space. Go back to that place. In this case, the example is the right shoulder. Go back to that place and ask for the sound that will fill it with light. Or ask your body for the sound that will replace it with the energy that it needs to heal that area. Whatever words feel right to you in this part, ask for the sound that will fill that space, .. So that is step 8. And then make the sound. And make it a few times. Follow your intuition here. Your body knows what it needs. Follow the great knowledge your body has. And keep the mind just kind of supporting that process. Now, step 9 is gratitude. Always gratitude. Go into your heart and just give thanks for the remarkable miracle of being able to release emotional energy so easily, quickly, and gently. And then step 10 is to ground. Again, always grounding. At times, this can be a pretty big, depending on where the energy is. Sometimes I feel if this emotional energy is in the heart, then there's a really good solid grounding needed afterwards. So go back to your tree. Do whatever you feel you need to do. Have a big drink of water. Have a snack. Go for a walk. Do one of those things or several of those things that really helps you ground again. And that is step 10. Yeah, that's the last step in this process.
Wow. So this is really interesting. We've often talked about emotional problems causing physical things. So we're actually, in a sense, kind of reversing that process. Is where is that physical energy manifestation stored so that I can let go of the energetic energy or the emotional energy?
Yeah, I love that way of explaining that, Tim. Absolutely. And sound is very physical. So it works at the physical level, and it also works in combination with other energy methods mm-hmm. and other modalities. So it can, this whole process can be used in combination with a lot of other things.
Nice. Well, beautiful. it's quite a process. I don't have, you know, one of the things I love about your work is that, often people think of sound healing as something like, well, you know, just play this music and it will magically fix all your problems. And what I love about your approach is like, well, first we have to find the resonance of what's going on for us in the first place. First we have to have that connection. Not just, you know, one song fixes all.
I so agree with that, Tim. There's so much brilliant music, but I always show that. I put my thumb and finger together as an inch. That would be, in the whole field of sound work, that would be the place for recorded music and songs. The whole field of sound is a rainbow that's at least 5 feet, mm-hmm. and recorded music is a very important inch of that. So there are so many ways in the field of sound to use this, and we are so wired to respond to sound. It's really, really effective. This whole process is so powerful, and it's one of the most powerful things we teach. It's simple and it's powerful, and I'm blown away by just the miracles of healing I've seen with this process.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking forward to trying it myself, honestly.
I would love to hear as you go through it. Yeah, and if you want some guidance, you can connect with me to go through it together.
Yeah, it reminds me of a toning process that I have sometimes taught folks about. Stand and relaxing the body and letting the sound and vibration come up through your feet and resonate through your body and vocalize in whatever way it wishes. And it's a powerful way to release it. I caution people, though, it's kind of an all-at-once process, whereas yours have steps, and I caution people, you know, you'd think people would do it more since it's so powerful, but actually it really, really quickly throw you back into the primal and tear you from your ego. And that doesn't usually feel well.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm.
So it can be a scary process, you know.
Yeah.
It's all at once.
Yeah, yeah. I like the gentle way. I've had too many 2x4s. So I'm all for gentle.
Yeah. And, you know, like you, and I know in my big transformation program, the very first module is all about grounding for mm-hmm. that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. So I love all the background on that as well. I was reminded while you were talking about the emotional resonance that... from Valerie Hunt, how physicists today describe how everything actually takes place in a field, that are, you know, rather than energy flying around, that vision, for example, you know, isn't random energy striking our eyes. It's a vibration in the field that are all the things we experience are vibrations in that field. And this is... reminded me of that. That's right, in keeping with that.
Absolutely. And I think because she was having trouble quantifying what she was discovering in the field, that she went to quantum mechanics in order for the mathematics and the understanding to communicate what she was discovering about the human energy field. It's groundbreaking research. She had such a brilliant ahead of its time contribution to the whole field of understanding the depth of what a human being is and the depth of the energy. I love the field theory too, because it makes so much sense.
although I admit I have trouble wrapping my head around it.
Yeah, I know. It's yeah. It,
well, I don't even know what to say, Sharon. You've made me speechless.
Oh my goodness! Do you have any other questions or about the process? I love what you're sharing, Tim.
Yeah, and everything is so thorough and well supported that I don't know what to do short of simply taking it in. I don't know what to ask. You have such an interesting take on this. When I have used some healing with people, it's in a little bit different way, and mainly more in terms of meditation and consciousness raising. So I'm without a context here.
Yeah, well, meditation and consciousness raising is an enormously powerful role. So that's huge, absolutely huge. And one of the things I've learned about working with sound is it's so profoundly vast in the different ways you can use it. And one of the things that just part of my personality is I see something in the energy field and I go, how the heck does that work? And then go into the science to try to explain that. And so everything I love to share I love to be grounded in how and why does that work?
Right.
And then to experience it with a bit more understanding. And for me, that's what really helps.
Yeah, you and me both.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's easier than other times, but yeah, as soon as we can get to a methodology, the much easier it is to explain and follow.
I agree. Yeah, I really agree. Mm-hmm.
And the background you've given here also explains something that I've often shared, which is the, for example, many times people will use music to affect different states and the idea that you just automatically put on something very, 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 very calm and relaxing. That's not a bad thing, but for many cases it won't work very well. And the reason is, as you said, you've got to meet the person where they are, and then you can gradually calm that. You know, it's why do teenagers listen to such bizarrely busy music? And it's because, well, that's what's going on inside them. That's what resonates with them where they are right now.
Yeah, I so agree with that. And there are sometimes, and one of the things that I use occasionally, and I have this as an exercise in one of our workshops, is using music, and in particularly this is real music with a really, really fast beat. And it's called Kundalini, and this musical track, it's kind of electronic music based, and it has a pounding beat. And so sometimes I'll put this on and invite people just to shake, to put the track on and just shake with the beat. So sometimes that physical motion can shake out some of the emotional stuff. So sometimes you need to move with emotional energy like this. So it's a wonderful approach exploring where people are at. And if this is an emotion that needs that kind of movement, then looking for music that has that really fast beat can really be helpful to encourage them to do that.
Yeah, dance, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I had years ago, I don't even know who did it anymore because it was on cassette. That's how long ago it was. But it was a wonderful meditation done by a duo, one of whom was a sitar player, and the other was guiding the meditation. And they started off and I'm trying to remember what the purpose of it was. I had actually discovered it was fantastic for getting to sleep. But they would start with a certain raga, and And it would work up through the colors of the rainbow. So we start with red. Imagine the color red in every part of your body, going through your body, moving through, touching every place that needs the healing color of red. And we'd spend, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes on this. And then the raga would change. And they would do orange. And then the raga would change. And they would do yellow, and so on and so forth. Until we and the last one after violet was then they would do white, and it was you know, each time just with the raga going changing and moving the vibration upwards. And I found that at the time I was listening to it, it was many years ago, but I was listening to it when I went to sleep, and I rarely heard the end of that tape.
It sounds spectacular. And I know the ragas are, every raga or scale in that system, it has a very specific intention and very specific effect. So what a powerful combination.
Yeah, and that's the what's what I love about the science and the techniques that you're sharing here is it reminds me of that. You know, they, you know, to an Indian musician practicing Nada Yoga, it's, you know, every performance changes depending on where it is, who is there, what time of day it is, what, you know, what season it is, and so forth. And it's very important that those match. In the West, we don't talk about that, although if you ask any experienced performing musician, they will tell you that, yeah, the performance changed depending on where you are, who's there, et cetera, et cetera.
There's that
interaction going on. And you can feel it on stage. You can just feel it.
Yes.
Yeah. It pushes you.
Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting connection, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And one of the things, whenever I've been performing, Tim, I've played classical guitar for many, many years, and one of the things where I know I've made that connection is when I hear that absolute silence. It's a silence that you can almost touch. Mm-hmm. And that whenever it happens, I'm just so grateful, because I know I've touched some hearts.
Right.
And when it's absolutely silent, then I know I've touched all of the hearts. It's the most profound experience I've ever had from performing. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely. I agree. I've had the same experience. It's the ones where everybody, where suddenly you can, you know, there's no noise at all. Those are keepers.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah.
As well as when the audience gets into a certain rhythm, you know, I more than once have played things that I can't play at home, just because the audience was pushing for it.
Oh, and you just how
go,
cool.
And you just go, well, here we go.
Yep.
Let it move through you.
Oh, how awesome.
So, very nice. So this the video that you shared, this is a video of this technique being demonstrated on this gentleman, and and if I understand our conversation that we had earlier, is that really the bulk of them, or even all the material that you shared with us today, actually comes from one of the modules in your programs, right, that you work with.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So tell us more about that and where people can go for more information on all this.
Well, to find information about the programs, you can go to soundwellness.com. And we're kind of in the middle of creating the soundwellnessinstitute.com, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be migrating our programs over to the Institute site. So maybe go to soundwellnessinstitute.com and just click on the link about programs, and you can explore and find out more information. One of the things that, because the field of sound is so vast, and particularly in the program, the fundamentals program, where this material comes from, the whole program is set up as a buffet of experience. So you experience recorded music, how and why it works, how it changes brainwave state, and then feel that happen in yourself so that you experience what it feels like and whether or not that would be a good tool for you to use. And then we play with tuning forks and Tibetan bowls and singing crystal bowls, because having those sound tools in your hands are a transformative experience, feeling the sound go through you. And then using the voice. There's several experiences using the voice. And this process of emotional healing is the most powerful one from that course in that buffet. So because we're all unique, I like to offer a wide experience of things within the field of sound that people can pick and choose and play with and actually experience. How does that feel for me? Can this be something that can help make my day easier?
Absolutely. It's a great approach. I do something similar in my self-healing course where there are 11 paths, all of which are a bunch of stuff. And then the idea is the same, where that there's got to be two or three of these that resonates with you from all of this material.
Spectacular. I love that approach.
Okay, great. Again, thank you for all the grounding in science. That was much of this was new to me, and throughout reminded me of real world experiences, like when you were describing about the glass and the resonance that things have. You know, every recording musician knows with irritation that every room has a resonance, and mm-hmm. and if
it
you
does.
Can't find it and account for it, that resonance is going to jump out throughout your recording.
And then you get this weird sound on the recording going, where did that come from?
Sure. And anybody, if you've ever, gone into an echoey room and just, sang something for fun, you'll notice that certain sounds just have that extra powerful resonance. You've found mm-hmm. the standing waves in the room.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Well, Sharon, I can't thank you enough for being on this interview today and sharing all this information with us, and for sharing the video as well. It's a wealth of information here.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me to be part of this, Tim. I'm really honored, and I'm very excited to be able to share more tools that will help people ground into things that will help make their days easier. We need that right now.
We do indeed. So again, thank you so much, Sharon. And for everybody, check over soundwellness.com or soundwellnessinstitute.com. And of course, we'll have a link to that video so you can check out how this works. So again, thank you so much, Sharon.
Thanks, Tim.
Take care. Okay, what an amazing interview from Sharon. So she talked about moving our emotions with sound, that in fact emotions are our life energy and how powerfully they affect us in our day. She talked a lot about the science behind things, starting with how a soprano can shatter a wine glass with their voice, and that Mythbusters actually explore this. If you tap the glass and find its sound, you sing the same sound, you can affect the glass very powerfully. So she reminded us that sound is, in fact, physical energy. That sound goes through you. In fact, it goes through you faster than it goes through air. So this idea that material sound, of emotional energy, we can find this and then move it. So I can't even start to do her talk justice in a summary here, but basically she talked about the science evolving first, that the brain and the limbic system in particular respond profoundly to emotions. She reminded us about the stimulus and response, setting off a fight or flight situation where we have adrenaline and cortisol going through our bodies, that this emotional response is a physical reaction, like a dog running at you. So if the dog stops, the stimulus is gone, but often we continue that response, and so we continue to have that physical influence even though the original thing has started. The stories we tell ourselves over and over again, the traumas we've been through, not to minimize that, but by continuing to live there in our minds, we continue those negative physical effects. She shared that many times a massage therapist will be working on an area and someone can be moved to tears as that emotion is released. She shared some of Candace Pert's work in her book, Molecules of Emotion, that in fact, we can't really talk about a mind and body connection, but that the mind and body, in fact, are connected. That this is how we matter is created, that and matter is affects our immune system. All through how our mind works in the passage that she read. So our body, and this was the most fascinating bottom line for me, that our body is the subconscious mind. All the time I've been looking for the subconscious mind. I'm walking around with it. she shared some work of Valerie Hunt in her book, The Infinite Mind, and the research they did with EKGs and EEGs and EMGs, measuring the heart energy and the mind energy and the muscles energy. And she's the one who discovered the human energy field and how to measure it and came up with a field explanation for emotions, which she describes as emotions as an agitation or a disturbance in that field. It's really, really interesting. And so we make a distinction then between facts and filters. That dog running toward us is a fact. The filters are the feelings that we have around that, whether we like dogs, whether we fear dogs, and so forth. She shared a definition of perceptual intelligence as knowing or the knowledge or understanding that in every experience, especially through thoughts and feelings. The point of that being that it's our perceptions, and that this is an active perception, not a passive one. It can change, and in fact, we can make choices to change that. And she shared that, in fact, stuck emotional energy, we can change that with sound. She shared some of the work of Manfred Kleins, the concert pianist who got interested in energy forms. He describes that certain principles. The first is that all emotions have a sound, which he called centic forms. Two, that these forms tend to be localized. And they can be in the field, but more often they're localized in our bodies. And three, that sound and voice can be used to unwind those. So you think of energy like in a spiral vortex. And that we can release that emotional energy. She shared the example of someone with chronic upper back tension. And in 10 minutes, not only released all that, but using that technique, was able to continue to use that technique to keep the pain out. And she has a video of that very same person describing that process. So she described 10 steps briefly. They are first to acknowledge the space we're in, that we use something to create a sacred space. Two, that we ground ourselves. So we imagine, most commonly imagine your tree with roots down through the ground and branches up above. Three, that we tune into our voice, and she gave the example of vocalizing a sigh to help to do that. Four, we scan the body with the mind, find the sounds in the body, and she specified here, allow the body to speak, not the mind, and just notice what comes up, where in the body this comes up. Five was to find the sound of that place, and we do this, she says, by breathing into that space, and like slide the voice around, up and down, a scale until we find where it kind of centers. We can ask, do you have a message for me? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. And ask for its sound. Step six is, has it moved now that we started paying attention to that? Number seven is, allow it to go. Let it dissolve. She shared the metaphor of an umbilical cord. And that sometimes it takes a while to allow things to go, to let go. So this is an ongoing process. Number eight is to fill the space. I love that part. We don't just leave empty space. We have to fill it. So ask for the sound that will fill it with light. Make that sound. Follow our intuition. Number 9 is to express gratitude. And number 10 is to, again, ground ourselves. So a very simple and wonderful process. And we chatted a little bit how certainly music has physical properties. You said even, you know, moving to music like dance can has healing aspects. And we talked a little bit about the power of Indian, the music of India, Nada Yoga, the ragas. And that even the West, performance musicians will talk about these things. We don't normally, they're not normally part of our culture conversation in the West. But anyway, a wonderful solid basis here in sound healing and a wonderful technique that anybody can use. In fact, I think I'm going to try and use it right now. So again, there's a video describing this, and if you to learn more about Sharon's work, go to soundwellness.com, or there are will be migrating over to soundwellnessinstitute.com. In the meantime, click the link on the video, and that will also take you there. Just a very thorough on Sharon's part. I actually had nothing much to add because there was so much and that was so beautifully presented. So I learned a great deal, and I hope you did as well. And I'm going to go try this technique. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.